Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we've got for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will see why Air India is demanding a sterile cockpit, while I look at India's latest bankrupt airline.
I'll see where Breeze plans to fly next, while Joe looks at the latest on 5G in the US.
Finally, Tom will fill us in on Qantas's new CEO.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And as you've just heard, we're going totally off the books and not talking about Ryanair or Lufthansa today. So
goodness me.
A bit, pretty wacky podcast. but you know, I wanted to talk a bit about Air India because that's somewhere, a part of the world that I don't really look into so much. And they had a bit of an interesting story recently. There was an incident inside the cockpit of a flight from Dubai to Delhi. Dubai to Delhi. And basically what happened was the pilot invited some friends, I believe, to come up and chill in the cockpit, which, you know, it's not great, is it?
Not really.
No. This has had a sort of knock-on effect. So the first sort of part of the story is that everyone who was involved in this incident was taken off of the roster. But, you know, it didn't stop there. So Air India has now issued an order to all of its pilots to refrain from any non-essential activities during crucial stages of the flight to maintain safe operations. And that's according to the Hindustan Times, as reported by our India lead Gaurav. So the airline said recent incidents have highlighted that there have been incidences of a lapse in maintaining a sterile cockpit, which resulted in avoidable errors posing flight safety hazards. This reinforced the importance of maintaining a sterile cockpit from the start of pushback until 10,000 feet, and again until engine shutdown, in order to keep the crew focused on the dynamic and rapidly changing environment and to enhance situational awareness. Oh, that was a mouthful.
It was.
I didn't think I'd finish it. So the airline also added how reports of unsafe cockpit environment reflect a lack of discipline and crew resource management, which I think is a good point. And they said it casts a negative light on the airline, also creating unsafe situations, which, you know, it's an interesting one because, yes, it is a negative light and it's an unsafe situation. But, you know, I think most people would understand and hope that this is more a one-off than the norm of Air India's crew. But they did say that any breach of this sterile cockpit guidance will result in appropriate levels of administrative deterrent and correction, which sounds very severe. But I believe that would basically mean you're also going to find yourself knocked off the roster. But it's not actually about something new that this is. So the incident in question actually happened on February 27th. So over two months ago.
Yeah.
And this, as I said, it was a flight from Dubai to Delhi. The captain asked to make the cockpit appear welcoming, warm, and comfortable, as though he was preparing his living room for a lady friend. That's a
quote.
Oh,
my goodness.
I love that. The DGCA, which is the Directorate General of Civil Aviation, which is India's aviation regulator, asked Air India to take the entire crew off the roster after that, and this is why we now have this latest notice about sterile cockpits. But it's quite interesting because, you know, I think if I'm not mistaken, in parts of Europe or most of Europe, no one who's not a pilot is allowed in the cockpit, or the crew is allowed in the cockpit during a flight under, I think it's the EASA rules maybe. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I definitely think they do need to keep the sterile cockpit going because I've watched many an episode of Air Crash Investigation where somebody being in the cockpit who maybe shouldn't have has led to incidents. But it's a bit of a shame, you know, because I do remember the days. I remember just about before 9/11 when you could go and visit the cockpit during the flight,
too.
And this was a normal thing. So
my uncle worked for British Airways as an engineer, and whenever we flew with BA anywhere, he'd always like send a little note across to the flight crew and say, oh, my niece is on the flight, please. And I'd get to go up there and stand there, and, you know, I was even on approach to an airport sort of sitting in the jump seat watching them doing all the business those with the buttons and switches, but it's not possible anymore. My kids have never been invited into the cockpit on a flight, and I think that's probably a good thing. But yeah, definitely hope that Air India keep it up, because that's not a good look.
And
yes,
I have set you up perfectly for a segue today.
For once, Tom, because the big news this week is that another Indian airline has run into some unexpected trouble. Well, it's not entirely unexpected, but we'll get to that in a minute. So Indian low-cost carrier Go First unexpectedly filed for bankruptcy earlier this week. The bankruptcy filing shows that the airline owes its creditors almost $800 million. The airline blamed the bankruptcy on faulty Pratt & Whitney engines on its A320 family aircraft fleet. But the bankruptcy is kind of notable because it's the first one in India since Jet Airways all the way back in 2019. You know, it's kind of surprisingly, I guess, no airlines actually went under during the pandemic. But, you know, it was still a bit of a surprise, given the fact that it's had some financial troubles and it's widely reported to have issues with Pratt & Whitney. It was still kind of seen as a healthy airline. It was the fourth biggest in India. And it was one of the first low costs, actually. It began operations in 2005, just a couple of years after Air Deccan, which takes the crown as being the very first low cost airline in India. So it had a good start, but it did face some intense competition. Lots of people say that it didn't grow fast enough. It kind of limited its fleet and network while others around it were growing rapidly. I mean, you look at Indigo that came later, but is now kind of twice the size of Go First. But the real issue has come since 2020, when the airline reported frequent engine faults and technical problems. That then evolved into financial disputes between the airline and its engine supplier Pratt & Whitney over the engine replacement and maintenance agreement. And then in February this year, Pratt proposed a plan to supply replacement engines at a rate four times lower than the failure rate, which led Go First to file for emergency arbitration in Singapore a month later. But, you know, the problem with Pratt & Whitney hasn't just affected Go First. I've spoken about it before on this podcast. But in India itself, Indigo is also an Airbus operator. They have had the same issues, but they've managed to absorb the shock much better than Go Fast. It might not go fast if it hasn't got an engine, which now apparently has half its fleet grounded. So to kind of look at this, you know, it got through the pandemic just about. It was difficult, was for everybody. But in December 2019, there were just 7% of its aircraft grounded due to faulty Pratt & Whitney engines. That rose to 31% in December 2020. And by December last year, it was 50%. So you can imagine that's a massive amount of your fleet out of use. It was already running at a loss. The airline has been kind of surviving on bailouts and cash injections for quite some time. But in 2022, it posted its biggest loss to date of $220 million. Worst of all, it hasn't been able to capitalise on the massive rebound in travel that we've seen this year because it hasn't got enough active airplanes. It has been reported that Go First has now sued Pratt & Whitney for nearly $1 billion for all the losses it's suffered in the past few months. Pratt & Whitney replied by saying that it is complying with the March 2023 arbitration ruling. But, you know, as I said earlier, it's not just Go First being affected by Pratt & Whitney engine issues. We talked about Air Baltic on the podcast before. They had to double their wet lease capacity for this summer because engines are taking such a long time to return from their maintenance visits. Air Tanzania and Air Senegal, which are A220 operators, they're actually teaming up to take legal action over the delays to engines being returned. And Turkish Airlines as well said the Pratt & Whitney engines on his A320s had been facing technical issues. And the biggest problem is the long turnaround times for workshop visits. So, you know, Go First, it is bankrupt. That's what they filed for. But at the moment, they've only cancelled their flights for May the 3rd, 4th and 5th. The website does continue to accept bookings for future dates. In fact, the owners of the airline, the Wadia Group, said that they are still fully committed and that they have no plans to exit the airline. Speaking to Reuters this week, its chief executive, Kashik Kona, told the publication that the insolvency proceedings are more aimed at reviving the airline, not selling it. So there are strong hopes that Go First first isn't gone for good or gone second, should we say? but, you know, it is a massive issue. And, you know, the Pratt & Whitney engine issues have been dragging on for a while. Pratt & Whitney are doing their absolute best. It's not really their fault. You know, we can't lay all the blame at their door. There's huge supply chain issues. There's problems with the supply of raw materials right through to the parts that go into the engines. And they are projecting that by this time next year, they'll be more back on track. But, you know, in the meantime, let's hope we don't lose any more airlines because they can't fly the capacity they need to this summer.
Yeah, well, I just remember that when I was chatting to Martin Gorse back in late March, he was telling me that Air Baltic thinks it's going to be until 25, at least 2025, that they've got their entire Pratt & Whitney backlog cleared. So, yeah, it's definitely one to watch, and hopefully hopefully go first, get to go second, and don't end up like Flybe 3.0 or whatever we chatted about a few weeks ago. But, yeah, I wanted to hop across the pond and then some and talk a bit about a US airline. And this week, our colleague James Pearson, who looks at routes for us, found an interesting submission to the Department of Transportation. And basically, Breeze Airways, which is David Neeleman's A220 job in the US, it wants to go international now. And it has... it's filed to operate a weekly service from Los Angeles International to Los Cabos in Mexico using the 220. But it's quite interesting because James, you know, he knows his stuff about routes. I was going to say a word that I can't say on this podcast then. He knows his stuff when it comes to routes. And he says it's a really bizarre route to file because Breeze focuses on unserved and underserved routes. And Los Angeles to Los Cabos really isn't one of these. So what's going on here? Well, he reckons that it's likely that Breeze is just using this route to gain permission to fly internationally to Mexico. And for competitive reasons, it's hiding its real plan from other airlines because, you know, why would you tell your competitors where you're going to go, especially
sneaky.
You know, like if American Airlines can already fly to Mexico, Breeze could say, oh, we want to fly to Mexico City, say, from this airport. And American Airlines could say, actually, we're going to do that before you get permission. So, you know, it would, he said once the route is presumably approved, they'll probably just say, oh, we're going to fly here instead now in an update. But it's quite interesting because they shared some interesting details about this route. So the year-round service, if it was operating, would give 7,124 seats each direction. And based on this, Breeze reckoned it would carry 5,720 passengers each way on each average annual with a load factor of 80%. So it's quite interesting because in the first years, it would achieve a total revenue. I love the amount of detail this goes into. Just on this specific route, it would take a revenue from fares and ancillary bits of $755,040. But, you know, he said this is probably not very accurate, but this gives a per passenger price of 132 each way before taxes and all of this fun stuff. So this would give a loss in the first 3 months because of one-off startup expenses. And the annual loss for this route in the first year was given at $82,253. But, you know, this is not hugely surprising because you've got to put some money in to get some money out, and you know it would probably be more profitable after a while. But he said that sales within the first 24 to 48 hours of a route opening for sale are usually a very good sign of whether it will do well or not. But you know, this is you know, earlier I mentioned the reason he said it was unusual for Breeze is because they focus on unserved and underserved routes. Well, if you look at November, for example, from Los Angeles to Los Cabos, Alaska Airlines has 16 to 18 weekly flights. American Airlines has eight flights a week. Delta varies between a daily service to eight services a week. JetBlue flies daily. United flies daily. And Spirit flies daily. So this definitely does not fit the bill of unserved or underserved. But maybe, you know, maybe they're just, they are trying to do something a bit different from their model. But it will be interesting to see where exactly they do fly. James reckons that Breeze could fly internationally from San Bernardino, perhaps, because they would have US customs clearance there.
Right.
Also from Provo, which would have US be subject to US customs clearance. But he did also mention that it perhaps won't be from the west of the US at all, because their top two airports right now are Charleston and Hartford. So, you know, it's interesting. I hope that they get the international approval, and I'm fascinated to see where they do go if they don't go to Los Cabos from Los Angeles.
Definitely. Very sneaky way around it, and an interesting move, I think, by that little airline that's doing so very well.
I do love the ingenuity, though.
Definitely, definitely. Well, let's hope that they're not going to get any Boeings, because there's a bit of an issue going on with certain Boeings in the US. That was a very tenuous link. But there is a movement on the 5G situation in the US. So basically, there is some 5G due to go live very close to airports. And the way that the transmitters have been positioned means there is a potential for interference with aircraft equipment. So airlines have been pushing the US to delay their deadline to refit planes with new sensors that would address this possible interference. And, you know, they're saying that the cutoff date, which at the moment is the 1st of July, would mean that there could be travel disruption because they haven't got around to fitting all the planes with the necessary upgrades. However, Transport Secretary, and I'm going to try to say this name properly this time, Pete Buttigieg. Is that better than Buttigieg? I'm sorry, listeners. Pete Buttigieg said on Tuesday this week that the deadline would remain in place. Airlines have warned that they can't meet the deadline and may be forced to ground some of their planes. So the telecoms firms have been working with the aviation industry, and they've already delayed this 5G rollout for quite some time. I think it was nearly a year to allow airlines time to adapt. So the issue is that the 5G frequencies being used are in part of the C band, and it's very close to the same frequency that is used for radio altimeters, which tells pilots how far off the ground their aircraft is. Obviously, that's very important, particularly when you're taking off or landing at an airport. So in the call with the airline companies this Tuesday, Mr. Buttigieg told them to work aggressively to get their planes retrofitted before the deadline. IATA, of course, has weighed in, being a representative of many airlines that either live in the US or fly to the US. They said the decision not to extend the deadline does make it much more likely we will be disrupted this summer. They said that supply chain issues make it unlikely that all aircraft can be upgraded before the 1st of July deadline. This threatens operational disruptions during the peak northern summer travel season. The estimated cost to upgrade each plane is $638 million. So I think that's for all the planes, not each plane. That would be ridiculous. But obviously, you know, an investment that airlines probably don't want to make if they don't have to, but it seems that they do have to. Nick Kareen works at IATA. He's the guy that's in charge of kind of lots of security and technology bits and pieces. And he said airlines did not create this situation. They are victims of poor government planning and coordination. So airlines have previously said they do want the 5G signals to be excluded from about 2 miles of the airport runways, affected airports that have already been identified by the FAA. But the phone companies have already spent tens of billion dollars of upgrading their networks to deploy 5G. And of course, they want to roll it out because it means faster speeds for people that are using their phones and more data being consumed, which is a good thing for them. So we don't have that problem in the EU. And the reason for that is that networks operate at much lower frequencies than those that US providers are planning to use. So there's a bigger separation between the frequency of the 5G and the frequency used by aircraft for radio altimeters. Our 5G masts over here also operate at a much lower power, but some countries have taken further steps already to reduce possible risks. So, for example, in France, there are buffer zones around airports where 5G signals are restricted. And also, if you look at the antennas, they're actually tilted downwards to prevent potential interference, whereas the ones in the US kind of go straight out and are almost kind of looking at the incoming planes. So in the UK, the CAA said there's been no confirmed instances where 5G interference has resulted in any aircraft system malfunction or unexpected behaviour. But you know, the situation in the US is a bit different and there is a risk, which obviously we don't want to happen. You can't have risks of planes not knowing how high they are off the ground when they're going to an airport.
Especially when it's poor visibility.
Well, exactly. You know, they need to be able to use their instrument landing systems and to navigate safely. But there's also been a separate development. The FAA on Tuesday proposed new rules for lots of Boeing aircraft due to the possibility of new 5G interference. And the proposed rule will affect nearly 20,000 airplanes around the world. And the rules will require revised flight manuals, bans on some landings, and new operating procedures for landings and approaches where there may be 5G interference. So it's not just Boeing's, you know, it's any aircraft with this particular sort of radio altimeter, but it does seem that it is kind of skewing towards affecting more Boeing's than other types of planes. It's a bit of a problem for the US where there is such heavy use of Boeing aircraft and particularly the older narrow bodies, you know, the old 737s that all have these radio altimeters that could be affected. So hopefully the airlines can put their foot on the gas and get them all installed before the 1st of July. But the issue is that if they don't, they won't be able to fly in and out of those airports. And that means more cancellations, more disruption and another sucky summer, which we don't want.
We definitely don't want. But I think cancellations would still be better than dangerous flights if it did come to it.
I'd agree with that, but many wouldn't.
Yeah. And well, I wanted to wrap up by quickly talking about a story covered by our Australian correspondent, Michael. And that is that Qantas has a bit of a succession plan in the works. So what I find interesting is, you know, Alan Joyce has been with Qantas now for 15 years, and he is really like the Willie Walsh of Qantas, if you look at how Willie Walsh was of BA and then IAG, you know. But he's on the way out, and they've taking instead a 28-year-old lady to replace him. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on. According to the chairman of the Qantas Group, a guy called Richard Goyder, he said that a lot of thought has gone into the succession and the board had a number of high-quality candidates to consider, both internally and externally. So who got the role? Well, the new Qantas CEO is a lady called Vanessa Hudson. She's actually been working at the airline since 1994. And I realized that when I said she is 28 years old, she's been, that rather means she's been in the industry for 28 years. So she's sitting as the CEO designate, and she will be the 13th CEO in 103 years of Qantas history. So they do stay with Qantas for quite a while, the CEOs. She's had senior management roles before, such as finance, catering, in-flight services, sales, distribution, commercial planning. And she also spent some time as the senior vice president for the Americas and New Zealand. She's going to continue in her current role, which is as the group CFO, until she takes the CEO role. And it's not too sure, I believe, who's going to replace her as the CFO yet. But, you know, she said, commenting on her appointment, she said, "It's an absolute honor to be asked to lead the national carrier. This is an exceptional company full of incredibly talented people, and it's very well positioned for the future. My focus will be on delivering for those we rely on and who rely on us, our customers, our employees, our shareholders, and the communities we serve." So it is a bit of an end of an era for Qantas because, as I said, you know, Alan Joyce has been CEO for quite some years now. He's going to have some legacy left behind because he really looked after the airline at a time of big change when COVID-19 happened, the 747s were on their way out, and he signed the deal with Airbus for the 350s for Project Sunrise. So it's, you know, it's interesting, the timing, I think, because I haven't seen the exact date, but I might have missed that. But you know, one would think maybe he might be out of the door before Project Sunrise, and that's really his baby. So,
Shame interesting. For him.
Yeah, I mean, interesting to see the future, though, and what Vanessa can bring to Qantas.
I'm excited to see more women in the C-suite, which is obviously something the industry is pushing for. And it's good to see another lady joining the ranks. But I'm really keen to see what Mr. Joyce does next because he's such a personality in aviation. I can't believe he's just going to retire and go and do gardening or something. You know,
maybe
I think
he's going to join the other Saudi airline that's being launched.
Oh, Neom. No, I love
The other one, wasn't it? I think Neom is the Etihad chap.
Oh, is it? No, that was Riyadh Air is Tony
too
Douglas.
Many airlines.
I love that Neom Air is going to be named as it sounds. Neom. Anyway, I think that's all we've got time for on today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And as usual, welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at Simple Flying. Simply visit simpleflying.com, or you can find us on social media by searching Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.